This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Cedarside.com, your all-natural, organic solution to pest control problems, protecting people, pets, and premises. Cedarside.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today it's time for yet another in our series of clinical-focused podcasts on medical and nutritional issues. And today we're going to talk about fatty liver disease. This is sometimes referred to technically in medicine as NASH, non-alcoholic steatohepatitis, or NAFLD, non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. And I've already done an article for our newsletter, which is posted at drhoffman.com, entitled 21 Ways to Save Your Liver. So check it out. Go to drhoffman.com. And the article is posted on our front page. The reason I chose the title 21 Ways to Save Your Liver is there's a classic Saturday Night Live video that is still archived on YouTube. This is from, I think, the 1980s or the early 1990s, when Dan Aykroyd was a cast member on SNL, and he made his way into the annals of comedy fame with a hilarious impression of Chef Julia Child, and he was demonstrating, portraying a Julia Child. He put on a big kind of a fright wig, and he was trilling in Julia Child's usual falsetto, "Save the liver!" Because, you know, I don't do it as well as Dan Aykroyd, but that became kind of a famous phrase, "Save the liver." Because Julia Child always talked about how, you know, when you're cooking a chicken, the liver is the best part. You want to save it and make pate. By the way, in that skit, Dan Aykroyd manages to chop off his thumb in the process. And it's worth going back, checking out on YouTube. But saving the liver is no laughing matter, because this is a big, big problem for Americans. Each year, more than 100,000 patients are discharged from U.S. hospitals with a diagnosis of chronic liver disease, or worse yet, cirrhosis. They say that liver disorders are the 12th leading cause of death in America. But that statistic may belie the seriousness of the problem, because if you look at adults age 45 to 64, that particular age group, middle-aged adults, it is number four in mortality. So it chops down people in midlife, in their prime. And a lot of people, and that's surprising, because a lot of people think, you know, cancer and heart disease, those are the major killers. But in certainly in the age group 45 to 64 in middle age, it is number four in mortality behind cancer and heart disease and, I believe, stroke. So a lot of people would think that the main way that you can get to liver failure or to cirrhosis that becomes life-threatening and often necessitates liver transplantation is via alcoholism. And certainly that used to be the case, and it's still the case to a large extent, but actually nutrition has surpassed alcoholism as the major cause of liver failure. It also, poor nutrition and overnutrition also surpasses chronic hepatitis. You know, there's a big campaign to make people aware of hepatitis C, which it is thought that at least half of people suffering from hepatitis C have not yet been properly diagnosed. And so we're only seeing the tip of the iceberg. A lot of those people end up with serious liver problems and cirrhosis and liver failure. But actually, it's diet. It is the consequences of obesity, and in particular, the metabolic syndrome, which is responsible for type 2 diabetes ultimately, and cardiovascular disease, and hypertension, and even cancer risk, that metabolic syndrome drives fatty liver. So some stark statistics, fatty liver has reached epidemic proportions by some estimates affecting from 10 to 20% of the population, and it varies by subpopulation. A recent study showed that up to 45% of Hispanics have some form of liver compromise, and that may be in line with their greater propensity towards obesity and metabolic syndrome. It may be that Native American component in many U.S. Hispanics renders them more susceptible to the excesses of the American diet. There's a thrifty gene, and then when you subject that thrifty gene that makes use of meager resources in mountainous or desert regions of the world, and you subject that genome to the environmental stresses of life in modern America, that this may result in overwhelming the liver. So what exactly is a fatty liver? Well, if you see a fatty liver, as I have, and you can see it on autopsy specimens, but you can also see it literally during operations. When they open up the abdomen, you can look at the liver that is fatty, and it's enlarged. And it's light brown or yellowish. When you cut into it, it's got little yellow streaks and globules. And it is, by contrast, a normal liver is dark brown and uniform. So literally, the liver becomes infiltrated with fat. And that may cause, ultimately, impaired liver function, swelling of the liver, then scarring, that's called fibrosis, and then even cirrhosis, where large parts of the liver are literally destroyed. You know, the liver can take a beating and keep on ticking, can take a licking and keep on ticking. And there's a lot of reserve, so that even people who lose, like, you know, 80, 90% of liver function, they can still survive, unlike with other organs like the brain or the heart. But the liver reaches a certain point in cirrhosis where it can no longer compensate, and you start to have some severe problems, and that may necessitate liver transplantation. So, practically speaking, how would you know if you have a fatty liver? Well, liver function tests can be used, AST and ALT, or as they used to be referred to, SGOT and SGPT are commonly available on regular chem screens as a way of determining if the liver is functioning normally. There's also a very specific test called the GGT, gamma-glutamyl transferase, which is less frequently done, but it's a sensitive test for any kind of insult that is occurring to the liver. But here's a problem, and this is interesting, is that if you go from one lab to another, you will see that they have different standards and different values for what constitutes normal liver function. And that is because probably people with truly normal or optimal liver function are very few and far between in America. The vast majority of us suffer from the effects of environmental toxicity, maybe a little too much alcohol, overweight and metabolic syndrome. And so we probably are giving people a lot of leeway on liver function. And there's no longer any such thing as optimal. We tend to look at, you know, just whether these numbers are wildly out of line. Now, another way of helping you to diagnose this is you can get an ultrasound, which may show an enlarged liver or the changes, lack of uniformity of the liver that might characterize fatty liver. That's one way. It's a non-invasive test, or a CT scan of the liver. But short of getting your body imaged, if you take a blood test and you have triglycerides that are, say, over 200 or so on a standard lipid profile, there's a very high likelihood that the high amount of fat in your bloodstream is mirrored by a large amount of fat deposition in your liver, and you may be well on your way to fatty liver. Another simple way to determine if you have a fatty liver is if you have a fatty belly and you've got a high waist-to-hip ratio, and it's greater than 1 for a male or greater than 0.8 for a female, it's very likely that you have metabolic syndrome, which is often accompanied by fatty liver. Also, if you have signs of prediabetes, such as an elevated hemoglobin A1C, crossing the Rubicon into a diagnosis of frank diabetes occurs when your hemoglobin A1C is 6.2 or above, but people in the borderline region, 5.7 to 6.2, are certainly at higher risk for a fatty liver condition. Also, people who have a fatty liver, they may be suffering from some degree of malaise or brain fog or just a sense of overall excess. And what's interesting is that the way that the French make something called pâté de foie, which is literally pâté of a fatty liver, pâté de foie gras, gras means fat, is by taking a goose and cruelly putting a funnel in its mouth and stuffing bread into the funnel and shoving it into the goose's stomach. And it's interesting, they don't feed the goose fat to give the goose a fatty liver. They feed the goose a form of refined carbohydrate, which is white French bread that is spongy and refined. And that's actually a clue as to how people get fatty liver. You might say, well, how do you get fat in your liver? Well, you eat a lot of fat. Actually, not so much the case. The way that you get fatty liver is you gain weight, you overeat, but in particular, you overeat carbohydrates. And so many of us are human geese, force-feeding ourselves, especially with excess carbohydrates, and that may go directly to the liver. Now, studies show that there's something particularly bad about one form of sugar or carbohydrate source that has gone from relatively insignificant in the American diet to a very high percentage of the calories that we ingest, and that is fructose or fruit sugar. A little fructose here and there in fruit is okay. But what we've done is we've begun to replace glucose, which is old-fashioned sugar, or sucrose, which is, you know, table sugar, with high fructose corn syrup, which is more economical to make from corn. It's cheap, it's abundant, it's subsidized by the U.S. government with corn subsidies. And so we have millions and millions of gallons of this stuff that we can sweeten foods with, even salad dressing, as ridiculous as that may seem. But the major source of high fructose corn syrup in the U.S. diet is actually not candy, it's soda. And people who consume a lot of soda get a lot of fructose. And that is very, very easily converted into fat in the liver. The liver takes in the fructose, and if it's overwhelmed and there's too much fructose, then it will perform a little alchemy and it will turn the fructose into what are called triglycerides, which is a storage form for fat. And some of that goes to your belly and your butt and your love handles and your thighs, but some of it will actually deposit in your liver. So here's another thing about the liver. If you study anatomy, you see that the liver is located on the right side of the body, under the right rib cage, and it is connected to the digestive tract via something called the portal vein. And the portal vein takes blood from your intestine, and it goes directly to your liver. And the idea there is that the nutrients that you want to absorb get picked up via the digestive tract, absorbed, and then sent via the portal vein directly to your liver. And that's good because the liver can then process. It's like a factory. It's also a detoxification organ. It'll take whatever your body dishes out in terms of the foods you ingest and either detoxify them or convert them into helpful compounds. But the problem is that when you overeat, you get the shock, literally, of a flood of excess nutrients, in particular excess sugars, that hits your liver and overwhelms your liver. This is also important because there is a condition that we now recognize, which is intestinal toxicity or dysbiosis, where toxic bacteria and yeast may overgrow in the intestine and produce harmful substances, or you may have what's called leaky gut syndrome, where the walls of your intestine become permeable to toxins and only partially digested food proteins. And this goes whammo right up through the portal vein, which is a huge superhighway, directly into the liver. And this can have a toxic effect on the liver. So the implication is that you can actually save the liver by taking probiotics, by eating a healthier diet that is rich in beneficial prebiotics, and overall cleaning up your gastrointestinal tract. So what are some other dietary measures you can undertake? Well, for so long we've been telling people, you know, don't drink coffee, avoid coffee, coffee's bad for you. Well, it turns out that from the standpoint of the liver, coffee is beneficial. And the hint about why that may be beneficial comes to us from an old practice in naturopathic medicine, which has been scoffed at by modern medicine as a true form of quackery, a bizarre practice, something that's just kinky, weird, and, you know, it's been denounced frequently, and that is coffee enemas. Coffee enemas are still used by some naturopathic physicians, and they're actually a mainstay of one of the practitioners that we frequently interview here on Intelligent Medicine, Dr. Nick Gonzalez, who treats cancer patients by detoxifying their livers with coffee enemas. Coffee actually causes a discharge of excess bile from the liver, and there may be some beneficial effects of the dark polyphenol. Polyphenolic compounds. The polyphenols are dark compounds and colorful compounds found in fruits and vegetables, but also in coffee and chocolate. And there are dark phenolic compounds that may be protective to the liver as well. It may be that decaf can help, but be careful about decaf because cheap decafs are often made with harsh agents like methylene chloride, which is clearly harsh on the liver. So try to get Swiss water processed premium decaf, which sometimes costs a lot more, but at least it doesn't deliver an extra dose of harmful chemicals to your liver. You don't have to do coffee enemas to benefit your liver. I've actually recommended that to some of my patients who have liver problems and who are amenable to doing that. It's a little weird, but you can simply drink coffee, and that's actually been shown to forestall the development of several forms of liver disease. Now, as I said earlier, the liver is responsible for rendering harmless numerous toxic chemicals that we ingest in our food, water, and even in air. They all get to the liver, and it has an enormous capacity to protect our bodies from harm. It's amazing that our livers do as well as they do with the onslaught of harmful substances that we subject them to, but that's what they're designed to do, because even in prior to the modern era and industrialization, there were poisonous chemicals in the environment. The liver was designed to help protect humans from the harmful effects of eating the wrong weed or developing a serious gastrointestinal infection, which released toxins into the system. So the liver, however, in the modern era, is the shock organ that is often overwhelmed by excessive toxicity. So detoxification is an important route to protecting the liver. And one of the ways that we do that at the Hoffman Center is we have patients do a core restore program, which is designed, it's not a fast, but it's a way of eating lightly, eliminating a lot of foods. You determine if you're sensitive to certain food allergens, which themselves may actually put stress on the liver. But also, you're just simply eating less. We give people some basic nutrients, which we think are necessary to promote detoxification. And also, there's some gentle herbal support for liver using the CM Core kit. It's like a detox in a box. It's easy to follow the instructions and to self-administer this detox over a period of 3 to 5 days. And it's amazing what clarity it gives people. People feel they are, feel lighter, less brain fog. They see more clearly. Really feel that there's a benefit. And it's not just about losing weight. It's also important to lighten your liver's toxic load by using natural cosmetics, because what you put on your skin, near your mouth, around your eyes, gets absorbed. And avoid harmful household products, because what you breathe in ultimately it goes in the bloodstream and the liver has to do the detoxifying. Certainly avoid smoking. Avoid processed foods that have unpronounceable ingredients, because all these chemicals go to your liver, and eat lightly. Definitely opt for organic produce and naturally raised animal products that are free of chemical additives. Because these man-made chemicals really create additional stress for the liver, particularly if it's compromised with fatty liver. So detox is a very, very important element. And, you know, the French have an interesting culture because they spend a lot of time doing bad stuff to their bodies. They drink a lot of wine, or at least traditionally in France, and they smoke Galois, and they eat pâté de foie, and they eat very rich foods. But in part of the French culture is to go to a spa to detoxify. And you eat very lightly, and you take mineral waters, and you get massages, and you sit in a steam bath. And this is actually part of many cultures where people go on fasts or retreats. In French, when people decide to do this, they sometimes refer to this as having a crise de foie, which is a crisis of the liver. So they, you know, they realize that their liver's taken a beating. They go off and they detox, and then they go right back at it, abusing their bodies again. It's something endemic to French culture. But at least they recognize that sometimes the liver deserves a break. And we deserve a break, and you deserve a break at this point, because we generally split these podcasts into two parts. So let's stipulate this is part one of today's Clinical Focus podcast on the subject of fatty liver. And when we return, we'll talk about some additional measures and specific supplements that you can use to prevent or reverse fatty liver. Today's catchphrase and motto is save the liver, and that's what we're going to try and do, a la Julia Child, channeled by Dan Aykroyd in that great SNL skit. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is Intelligent Medicine Podcast.